You're listening to the Ministry Grow Show, brought to you by Reliant Creative, the creative agency for gospel-centered ministries. Find out more at reliantcreative.org.
Welcome to the Ministry Grow Show, a podcast dedicated to helping churches and ministries grow and make more effective impacts for the kingdom of God in an ever-changing digital world. Whether you're building and growing a gospel-centered ministry or leading a church, if you want insight into the strategies, struggles, challenges, and successes of other ministry leaders, you've come to the right place. Welcome back to the Ministry Growth Show. Today on the show, I'm going to be talking with Evan Cox. He's the founder of Evan Cox Consulting. Evan, thanks for being on the show, man.
Hey, Zach. Grateful to be here. Thanks so much for the invite.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about your company, what you guys do, maybe why you exist?
Absolutely. So I serve small businesses and nonprofits. And oftentimes, as we found, there's an intersect between those two. I serve a lot of companies that also serve nonprofits and churches as well. So regardless of what individual industry it might end up being in, there's an interlink. It's a person of faith, or it's someone that's mission-driven or mission-minded to maybe make the world a better place or impact a certain cause that they care about or that their audience cares about. And so as that world has evolved for me over the years, became StoryBrand certified. I know that that's a mutual connection for us. Mm-hmm. And through that process, have about three main primary focuses for the nonprofits and businesses I serve. It's strategy, making sure that we have the right marketing and or fundraising, tactic, strategy, and plan in place to deliver on whatever outcomes our clients are looking for. It's also about creating content. So that comes down to messaging and making sure we have the right words and then building that out into web and email marketing and social and blog copy. And then finally, actually building out websites for small businesses and nonprofits to make sure that we can house all that wonderful content in a way that's going to serve them and their audience as well. So those are my three core focuses, and it's a lot of fun. It's never a dull moment.
Yeah, it sounds like it. So I heard that correctly. Strategy, content, and execution, essentially.
You got it.
Okay. Where between the three, where do you find you're spending most of your time with your clients, or do you guys work in a way that they have to go through all three processes with you?
That's a great question. For enterprise companies, like those large global companies, oftentimes you can find marketing leaders like us who run an agency or a firm of some sort saying you have to start with A before we'll go to B and then evolve into C. And I do have a preferred path for all of my clients to go down. You probably do too, right? Mm-hmm. But I notice that a lot of the folks that come to me might say, oh my gosh, I started writing my website, or I kind of built it, but it's not working. Can you help me? And so it takes some adaptability, especially in the nonprofit and church space, to say, okay, how can we take what you've already got and then build that into a framework that ends up getting you results? So in the StoryBrand space, which is a messaging framework that we're familiar with, it's about keeping your audience as the hero and you as the guide to serve them, right? So there's a book attached to it, there's podcasts, there's a whole bunch of content that folks can walk through. Most of the ministry leaders who come to me have dabbled. They've tried to build out their story, and they've got bits and pieces of it started, but they don't have it fully fleshed out. So our goal is to make sure that we start and get a strategy or a plan mapped out, taking what they've already created or begun to create, fill in the gaps, and then work towards execution. It's always starting first with strategy and then eventually backing our way out to execution.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, that's kind of what we find is every ministry comes to us at different stages of the process. And so do you find that you're having to create custom offerings for the different stages that any ministry or business client might be in? Or are things, do you have it pretty systematized from that perspective?
I do have it pretty systematized, but I would say it's systematized in buckets, if that makes sense. Okay. So if someone comes to me and they're like, oh my gosh, we need a website, or it's clear in a discovery call that they're like, okay, we're at the point where we need to revamp and redo our website. I have a proven process that I follow from start to finish to get them the right kind of website for their organization. But how we arrive at that point might be that they start by asking, hey, could you help me write some blogs? Or I don't really have a plan for my marketing. And getting to the point of actually deciding what to work on is where we have the most variable. Because ultimately, folks can come to me and say, like, I had a call last week. And they said, oh my gosh, we want a website. And it was very clear within 5 minutes that they were actually not at the point where they would see a quick return on that investment. So we pivoted and I'm saying, okay, what we should do first is have a small, like, go-to-market strategy for your nonprofit mm-hmm. to make sure that you're actually out in the world and visible and, like, you've got everything set up before we start to try and tell that story on a website.
Mm. Yeah. Can you tell us about maybe one of your most successful fundraising campaigns you've helped implement for some of your clients or one of your clients?
Yeah, so a few come to mind. I spent 15 years in the nonprofit space for a large international humanitarian nonprofit. And so the beauty of that being the backdrop of my experience is I started in operations and humanitarian aid, like the outreach department of any nonprofit or church. So I spent lots of time figuring out, okay, how do we build clean water programs? How do we ship containers of food across the globe? How do we do things directly in our backyard, domestic outreach of kinds? And then I shifted to then working on true operations and marketing. So figuring out, okay, like, how do we then see there's a need? We don't have this in place. How do we build out an effective plan for marketing? And then ended up my time actually leading the fundraising team. And in the B2B or business space, right, we see marketing and sales as kind of like two connected entities. In a nonprofit or church space, it's often fundraising and marketing that are those two connected entities. So outside of finance, I actually sat in almost every seat at the table, figuring out, like, how does a nonprofit or church work together collectively, all of those departments. And so during that time, I was able to actually help lead some fundraising activities where there was maybe a five-figure gift or a multi-million dollar gift because it was a large nonprofit. Mm-hmm. But what I see today is that all of those principles and skills are still applicable to what I would call a grassroots nonprofit, but it has to be scaled down, right? If we were going to come out with a print piece that was going to be distributed in lots of places with email marketing and social, it could easily overwhelm a smaller church, a mid-level church, or a nonprofit of that size. And so I'm constantly looking for the backdrop of a large, big global enterprise. All the things that we did that worked well, how do we customize that down to be really beneficial for that smaller nonprofit? So actually last fall and the fall before that, worked with a smaller organization that was doing great work for men who have a substance abuse issue of a variety of different forms. And what we did was we said, okay, there's limited time and capacity on the staff's part. So all the things that take lots of time, like calling individual donors and doing a press release or all the things that feel like, oh my gosh, I've never done this before. We actually pared it down to only working on email for one communication platform, and then a written appeal, not a fancy appeal that's publicly like produced somewhere, but it was actually like printed off in their small inkjet printer. And what we did was we sent out a connected campaign of emails and print pieces over the most important season for any nonprofit or church's giving calendar, right? Which is October, November, and December. It's the end of the year. It's the most crucial time. We were able to actually raise over $90,000 from their existing list. We didn't expand the list. We didn't go try to find new donors. But what we realized is, in their case, and in many nonprofits, and probably the folks that are listening here, is you can pump and pump and pump. It's almost like you're priming that pump, right? Saying, okay, here's a good update. We're doing it. Something on social, or we're doing all these amazing things, but maybe not having a like consistent choreographed ask. And so what we would do is say, oh my gosh, you went 6 months without asking anybody for anything. It's the perfect time for us to now follow up and give someone a reason to want to re-energize and give back to the mission that we know that they already care about. So in that case, we actually simplified it to the two most important elements, a written appeal and an email appeal. And they obviously do the hard work of thanking donors after someone gives. So it's not just all on me. Results just aren't me. Calling donors who give above a certain threshold. So they had some things in place. But I think it's really about finding what moves the needle and what is consistently applicable in terms of your ability to do that. Because we don't want to suggest for someone or one of our clients that they do something that takes 40 hours a week when they don't have staff members to facilitate those sorts of things. So it's about making it manageable and effective. Mm.
Yeah, what we found is a lot of times either a ministry will come in and say, hey, we want to try to reach new audiences. And that's the strategy they think they need to go pursue. But when you sit down and actually talk with them, it's like, how well are you engaging with and building strategy around the current audience that already is engaged with what you guys are doing, bought into your vision, bought into your plan of attack for whatever cause it is that they exist to serve. It's like, let's not forget like who got you here in the first place. And so it's wise to that you guys sat down and took some time to focus on that current audience already. What strategies have you found most effective in creating successful fundraising plans? Are you seeing any shifts in the industry away from mass fundraising to major donor development or church partnership? Are you seeing one work over the other? Are you finding that it's a collection of a handful of those? Because within the ministry sector, not Christian nonprofit, church space, there's a lot of options. There's a lot of strategies. And what I've found is a lot of organizations are trying to do all of them. Like, hey, yeah, we've got a major donor development strategy. Yes, we've got a mass fundraising strategy. Yes, we've got on and on and on. It's like, man, you guys are, and that maybe they have three or four people on their team. It's like, you guys are spread thin. What's the best use of your time, energy, and resources to go after these? Like, can we pare this down? Can we say, hey, let's focus on one or two rather than trying to do all things?
I think three things come to mind. Number one, and this is more high level, maybe at that like philosophical vantage point. When I was actually in the seat of fundraiser or nonprofit marketer for a 9-to-5 nonprofit role, the first thing that I saw a lot of my peers and colleagues struggle with is that you had a lot of passion, insight, and excitement for your core audience. So think about maybe you're a water program, right? You're providing clean water to folks in India or Africa or Asia, somewhere across the globe. That audience represents excitement and interest, right? And what does it feel like then to pivot to your fundraising hat that you put on? It can almost feel accidentally like an unnecessary, like, oh gosh, I have to do this, or a necessary evil. And what I think is, we want to focus intentionally on having our donors be prioritized to the same level as the end recipient of whatever your programming is. So you provide clean water, or you provide food in a food pantry, or whatever that outreach is, that is a core audience. That's why you started your ministry or nonprofit. But the people who actually give and help support that are just as important an audience. So your website should reflect that. You should have a section or a statement or maybe a whole page or section dedicated to donors with testimonials. And maybe it's donors and volunteers, but testimonials speaking to their needs and wants. You know, if we talk again about that story brand framework, the folks who want clean water want a tangible cup of water, right? The people who are giving towards that program want to see an impact or difference made or some sort of legacy left. They want completely separate things. And you get to see transformation in your end result of giving water to someone who needs it. But you also get to see a transformation with donors who maybe weren't able to make the difference that they make now as a result of partnering with you. So I think that's step one. Is I see so many folks be like, oh gosh, okay, it's time to go back and ask for money. It's time to put a fundraising campaign together. It's the end of the year. But it really should be a dedication to their interests and needs to the same level that you're putting interests and needs of your end user. So that would be number one.
That's interesting. Especially coming from Story Brand Guide. How do you, that's one of the things that I've struggled with the framework as a guide, as I've gone through the process, as I've studied the framework over the last 6-7 years. How does this framework, which works great for a plumber and a hair salon down the street, but when you start applying it in the ministry sector, it can quick, if we only ever focus on, I've seen it from the other's perspective. If we only ever focus on the donor as the hero in the story, it can quickly alienate our beneficiary, or what we would call our participant, as just somebody that's sitting there waiting for a handout. Right. And in a digital world where everybody sees our content, everybody sees our digital presence, whether they're in the middle of the bush in Africa or here in the West, like our messaging has to be written in a way that doesn't alienate one over the other. And so what you're saying, it sounds like, is both, and I would agree with this, is there's three characters, arguably four, in this story, right? You've got the ministry as the guide, or the organization as the guide, and then you've got the donor and the beneficiary, or the partner and the participant, sitting there as both heroic figures, heroic characters in this story and narrative. How do we communicate in a way? How do you guys think through this? How do you communicate in a way that lifts both of those individuals up as the hero in the story and doesn't alienate one over the other for the sake of financial investment in our ministry? Does that make sense?
It does. And I think the first thing there is the art of assuming best intent. Right, the words that we use matter, not just in terms of like copywriting. Yeah, it's true. Like eventually it all comes down to words, but the style in which we communicate, the words that we use matter. And if we assume best intent, then oh my gosh, it's going to set everything up for success. And here's an example. I worked with a nonprofit where we were walking through, okay, how do we want your website to flow? What does your marketing plan look like? And they said, okay, my donors, they want to help the needy. And I was like, okay, well, who do you serve? And, well, they're refugees who don't want to be considered needy. And that's right. That's like where they're in direct opposition. Both of them are coming to the exact same website looking for English classes or a program or a back to school event or something. And then on the other side, there's folks who maybe they don't know any different. And it's not intentional that they would say like, oh, that's offensive, but for whatever reason, using that term could cause offense. So how do we reapproach that so that everybody has either appropriate spot in the journey in a website, for example, or how do we just make sure that we're using intentional language, to your point, that doesn't alienate anybody? Because you're right, it's very different to have a plumber and build their website or walk through a marketing plan and be like, okay, part of them probably work with affluent folks and middle market and then lower income. That's a very different feel than, oh my gosh, my audiences want two polar opposite things. You're providing two very exclusively different services. And you have to think through, okay, how do I do that and assume best intent on both ends?
So do you guys find that you're splitting your audiences into two, your donor or partner and your beneficiary or participant, and creating two messaging structures for the two different brands for the two? Like, is that how, are you segmenting that much, or are you finding that there's a way in which we can create creative copywriting and written language that speaks to both, doesn't alienate one over the other, and we make statements that say, hey, everybody can agree with these. Like, this is not okay. These things are not okay. This is what we all exist to fight against. And write your messaging in a way that can speak to all parties involved.
I think it largely depends on the nonprofit. So that example that I just used, located here in St. Louis, right? And so even refugees who may not have had access to internet in droves before have now landed in a city where largely there's a lot of internet access, right? And so we do have to be really thoughtful, intentional about how we message in that case, because both audiences are looking at the exact same website. Working with a different nonprofit though, They were a missions organization where none of the end beneficiaries who received humanitarian aid would ever see their website. Rural setting, largely disconnected from even trying to Google and see, there just was no reason for them to do that. We pivot then the messaging to be almost exclusively donor or volunteer focused, because we know the number of people that might be in Cambodia looking at their website is very small. And if so, they're not making any sort of decision based on what's on their website. Mm-hmm. If you look at large nonprofits, think about World Relief, World Vision, IJM. Most of the American US forward websites are almost all donor and volunteer focused. Some of them in recent months have even been more like career focused, right? Because they need more talent. Now, a large organization probably has multiple websites, right? If you're in Europe, then it switches to the Europe. So it's really complex, but most of the nonprofits I work with are not at that scale. So we have to figure out on one website or one piece of collateral, how do we either choose one audience or message to both thoughtfully? Mm-hmm.
Now we've run into this with a handful of pregnancy centers that are in the,
yes,
in that space where they've got what they usually call clients or people who are dealing with unplanned pregnancies, families, single moms, et cetera, on one side, right? That would be their client side, as they would put it. And then on the other end of the perspective or the other end of the aisle is your donor who wants to see the unborn fought for, right? And generally in that space, mm-hmm. It's taken a lot of education for the donor to communicate, hey, we're in this, for most pregnancy centers, we're in this not just to fight for the unborn, but we want to also be there to serve these women and these families dealing with unplanned pregnancies. But those are wide gaps between those audiences, and how do you speak to do? And what, yes, I've found is most ministries end up just creating two brands, two websites, two audience, speaking to two audiences, two messaging structures, and it can become difficult and it becomes messy when you're talking about brand. So have you seen that? Have you played in that space at all and seen things that work or don't work?
That's a great question. So I do not have any clients that are in the pregnancy care space, but having worked alongside a lot of folks who do, I think you have to start making decisions about like, what is the risk of offense? Is it that, a feather might get ruffled? Like, is that the level of offense that we're thinking about? Or is someone going to be very disconnected from our services altogether based on the message? And that's why you can see a lot of pregnancy care centers have like a landing page with two buttons, right? I want help. I want to give help, or something along those lines. And then it goes to two separate websites or two separate spots on the same website. That seems to make sense if there's a high likelihood that offense, it could be detrimental to someone receiving care or being able to give care. Mm-hmm. The thing you have to think through is scalability. Right? Because then when we get on the back end and think about website and SEO and plans, you're effectively doubling a lot of your efforts. Not all of them, but it's twice the upkeep and twice the updating. So you just have to begin with the end in mind there to make sure that you're okay with making that conscious decision.
Yeah. I like to point to Alternatives Pregnancy Center is a great example of something done really, I believe something done really well in this space. When we started working with them, they did have two segmented audiences, two segmented brands. They were talking to the donor separate from the women and the families that they were serving. And they at some point decided, hey, we're just going to focus on the families and the women that we exist to serve. We're going to speak to that audience exclusively, and we're going to do our best to do a ton of education on the donor side to educate them and get them on board with, we're not just in this to fight for the unborn, although that is primary to our cause. That's primary to why we exist. But at the same time, we are here to be light in darkness for these women and these families that are dealing with unplanned pregnancies. And donor, you need to be okay with that. Like, if you are investing in this organization, if you're investing in our ministry, you need to know that that is primary. that's just as important to us as fighting for the unborn. And if that upsets you, then maybe we're not the organization. Like, they stood for who they were, what they stand for, and they educated their donor base around who they are, what they believe, and why they exist. And they really actually believed it, right? When we say what we believe, like, our communication needs to support that when we're talking about building brand, right? And so they did that. They stepped out and said, we are going to exclusively have a brand set up, message towards, in existence to serve these families who are dealing with this stuff. And donor, you can get on board with that, or you can find another organization that's doing something different. But this is the direction we're going. And man, it made a significant, they did have people that walked away and went to other organizations. But in the long run, the significance that that move made for their ministry was huge. It was gigantic. Mm-hmm. And it got the donor on board with, like, okay, I'm in this for more than just fighting for the unborn. I'm in this to invest in being light in darkness for these families, for presenting Jesus to people who have never heard of him. Like, as much as it's important to fight for the unborn, like, we value life in all shapes and sizes and forms and stages in life. And so we're going to fight for these women and present Jesus to these women who are dealing with these unplanned pregnancies in these families. And that's going to be just as important. And it was significant for their ministry when they made that shift. And it allowed, again, like you said, like, it consolidated everything. Now I only have to have one SEO strategy. Now I only have to have one messaging and communication model. Like, I don't have to segment things and break it into pieces and worry about, like, all the different headaches that come with that, right?
It's a little bit more work for sure. And when you think about fundraising, there's so much of it that's tied to money psychology. Like, we were talking off air about, like, how we were so prepared for certain elements of running a business and serving clients. And there's some things that you just were never taught until you're in the throes of it. And you're like, oh, I guess it's time that we learn about this. Or, like, this is when we get really good at this. And when it comes to marketing, it's kind of like, okay, we're going to get eyeballs. We're going to increase awareness. We're going to get the right message in front of the right people. But on the other side of that, with fundraising, there's this psychology element that folks in ministry, myself included, have struggled with for a long, long time. And that is, our view of money and fundraising is often drastically different from that of our donors and our major donors and supporters. Think about it statistically, and I forget where the report is, otherwise I would mention it. And I found it about 4 years ago. There was a faith-based study done that folks who give to a church or a nonprofit with some sort of faith intent are not giving to one ministry and then stopping and then giving to another organization. They're giving to about 6 to 8 organizations at any point in time. Mm-hmm. So if they stop giving to one organization, they'll likely just increase the funding to another or find another group. And so it's never that you are taking money out of their grocery bill. Right? As a long-term fundraiser and someone who actually was on the mission field myself, it often felt like, oh my gosh, if they give me $100, I wonder if they'll be able to make their electric bill on mm-hmm. next Friday, right? But the reality is, most folks who want to give have set aside those dollars for that activity or have some intent behind it. And so it's easy for us to get into this mindset of, like, oh, I just won't ask. Mm-hmm. Or I'll wait for God to provide, or I'll wait, whatever the case may be. But you need to be just as intentional and thoughtful with your communication strategy for fundraising mm-hmm. as you are for marketing. And so I think it's so easy for us to fall into that trap of, like, oh, they just gave last week. I can't follow up again and mm-hmm. talk to them about this new opportunity. And it might not be, depending on the donor, it might not be the right time. But just because someone gave yesterday doesn't mean that they won't be ready to give again sometime next month or in the next few months. There's a lot of that that we have to work through, I think, personally, to be ready and willing to serve the organization well as a primary fundraiser. Especially if you're a nonprofit with a smaller team, you may be the founder, executive director, and the chief fundraiser, and the toilet cleaner, and, you know, all the things. You might be doing all the things.
Right.
And so when you put on that fundraising hat, just like you put on the marketing hat, the objectives are ultimately the same, but vastly different in terms of what you do day to day.
Yeah. I think that part of it is that we've seen what happens when prosperity gospel gets into the church. And so we've swung the other end of the spectrum or the pendulum to poverty gospel, which is also not okay. And that I think is very much, you talk about like the psychology of money. I see it all the time. Like, we want to be careful in how we approach this. And it's like, no, there has to be somewhere in the middle, like that we have to find a balance between the two.
Yeah. And it's very interesting, isn't it? If you walk through either end of the pendulum swing, as with so many things, you end up cheating people out of an opportunity to serve, mm-hmm. or potentially cheating end recipients out of a chance to get whatever service you're offering. We don't want either one of those to have. So it's navigating that tension of how can I thoughtfully balance and be really mindful. So again, in our space, it's tactically using tools and digital tech stack and all the things that we know about marketing and fundraising, but then also just being very human, mm-hmm. right? Some of the most effective fundraising I ever did was picking up the phone, calling someone, not asking for money, but asking how they were doing, or sending a handwritten note after a gift was made and making sure that they knew that we really were very grateful. And that doesn't take a ton of effort, time, or even money. It's just, okay, we're balancing what we know about data and analytics with just a very human approach. Because mm-hmm. ultimately, at the end of the day, that human element is what's going to drive relationships, which build trust and increase generosity for the long haul.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Evan, this has been awesome. I want to make sure that we take a moment to hear from today's sponsor. But when we come back, we'll continue our discussion on strategic fundraising plans and fundraising campaigns and all the stuff that we've been talking about already with Evan Cox and his consulting agency. Are you looking to grow your ministry but don't have the money or marketing knowledge to make that happen? There's good news. Google offers an advertising grant to churches and ministries that is worth $10,000 per month. This means that if your ministry is a 501c3 nonprofit, you are eligible to receive $120,000 per year in free advertising dollars. This allows you to place ads at the top of Google search results pages and drive thousands of visitors to your ministry website every month. Our sponsor, Click Nonprofit, helps your ministry acquire this Google ad grant and then manages your Google ads to ensure you get the most out of the grant. Schedule a free consultation at clicknonprofit.com to learn more about how this grant can help your specific ministry. Mention the Ministry Growth Show when you sign up to get 20% off your first 3 months of management. Welcome back to the Ministry Growth Show. We've been talking with Evan Cox from Evan Cox Consulting about strategic fundraising plans, fundraising campaigns. Evan, as we get back into the conversation, how important do you think it is storytelling in fundraising, and how do you incorporate that into what you guys are doing with your clients?
I don't want to overstate it, but I think storytelling is the crux of all of the different deliverables or things that we actually bring to the table. It's like a key ingredient. So my daughter, she loves to bake. She's found a new love for baking, and I love to eat, right? So it's a perfect match there. But you're going to have some of the same ingredients, right? Sugar is going to be in most of those baking things. It's the same with storytelling. It's dropped into almost every single kind of deliverable, whether it's on-stage presentations, having coffee one-on-one with a donor, or a landing page and campaign that's going out to a larger audience. Storytelling forces people to lean in, right? Because we're genetically wired to love a really good story. When you put that story in light of what matters for the person on the other end of that coffee table, then it becomes incredibly powerful.
Talk to me about being genetically wired to engage with storytelling.
Oh, that's a great question. So when you think about the idea of story, and again, we could probably spend a lot of time going all the way back in the archives, but think about oral culture for a second. Mm. Not just on one continent or with one tribe or one people group, but across the board, before there was written language, in large parts, everything was passed down orally. The key tenets of a story, those controlling ideas, were deposited in a younger generation or whoever was around the campfire, whatever the setting was. And then that story was passed down. And if you think about how that plays out today, think about any movie, right? Any really good movie, it's going to have some key ingredients that hook people to pay attention. For me, an action fan, it's going to be Jason Bourne, where something's exploding in the background. For my daughter, she went to go see The Little Mermaid over the past weekend. And it was a completely different kind of hook. But that story still got her, right? That princess narrative or whatever the case may be at the very beginning of the movie. There's something inside of all of us that love a good story. If you think about the faith context, it's why Jesus used parables. If you look, I was just reading out of the Message in Luke a couple weeks ago, and I was highlighting all the times that he went from parable to parable, and the connecting sinew of that text was, and then he shared another story, right? Or he closed out with one story and opened another story. So, I mean, there's so many examples, faith-based and not faith-based, that just show we are predispositioned to love a really good story. Mm.
Yeah. That oral tradition stuff is so, I just did a video on this on our YouTube channel, but I talked about Rick Sessoms, who we had on our podcast a couple of weeks ago. He talks a lot about orality and oral tradition and story centric cultures. And he has this incredible quote. He says 70% of the world still functions in orality or oral tradition cultures, story centric cultures. And yet 90% of the missions world, the mission sending world, to that orality communication culture is using literacy-based means of communication to try to reach an oral tradition world. Like our models for how we communicate to an orality culture are completely broken. And I think, and this is the argument that I made in this video, but I think that we are, because of digital, in the West, where we've post-enlightenment historically been a literacy-based communication culture, I believe that we're starting to see a shift towards an orality or oral tradition culture, especially in my generation, millennial and younger, because of digital, where everything is iconography, photo, and primarily video. Like, those are story and narrative means of communication. And when we are consuming that kind of content for 8+ hours a day, like, it's causing a shift. Some of the stuff that you said when you were talking about that orality stuff sounded like, have you ever heard of the book Story Wars by Jonah Sacks?
I have not, actually.
Oh man, you got to read it, because you sound like you've read it. About that. We were oral tradition for most of human history. In the West, for the last however many, maybe 100 years, with radio and television, we moved into a broadcast era. Post-enlightenment, we have been functioning in this literacy-based communication. And now, because of digital, we are moving back. He argues that we're moving back into a pseudo-oral tradition culture, where again now, rather than the big brands having control over the narrative and the communication that we are pushed from TV and radio, the ideas and the stories and the narratives that are best are the ones that get shared, right? That's that idea you talked about. Like, I don't share a story with somebody unless it's an actual good story. Like, it doesn't get passed. And in a digital world where social media is social in nature, like, it has to be a good idea for it to get shared. It has to be good content for it to get shared. And so I think we're starting to see a shift in the West. But again, already most of the world is still functioning in those orality or oral tradition communication behaviors. And so as we see this shift in the West, and as the world continues to move back towards a global orality culture, as the church, large C, how do we make sure we're engaging with an orality culture, right? It's not going to be with literacy-based means. Like, it just can't. And so we have to think about our frameworks and our communication and ministries and churches as we approach the digital space, as we approach communication in the analog with the people that we're trying to reach. It has to be from a orality, story-centric, narrative-based communication form. Otherwise, we're just going to start to see our stuff continue to get lost in translation.
And it's about bridging the gap, right? We're not going to have our audience of our generation or younger stop Googling things, right? YouTube is not going to cease to exist. So it's not that you go completely away from any of the content or digital content that's available, but it's how do you bridge that gap? Like, I remember in fundraising, we had some really awesome content going on social with a older generation that wasn't seeing any of it because they weren't on Facebook or Instagram. And so I'd actually print out the image and the caption for a few select donors, cut it out, put it in a note card and say, I wanted you to be able to see this. And they would respond back and they're like, oh my gosh, this is a fantastic story. I wouldn't have seen this because I'm not on Facebook. And so that's not always like the ultimate answer for everything, but it's figuring out how do you bridge the gap, right? If you create lots of content that still might serve your audience well, how do you break out of the mold and serve it up in a way that's very story-based? Or how do you still have a website that ranks for SEO because you're doing all the right marketing things for your nonprofit? But then when it comes time to share a keynote or be in front of a large group of donors, how do you captivate them by selecting the right story at the right moment that encapsulates everything, and they don't have to worry about figuring out like which email do I look at? Everything is synthesized in the moment for them to know exactly what's most important. It's important to really figure out with marketing, how do you bridge that gap?
Yeah. Well, and back to that storytelling in application for fundraising and donor development and all of our communications. How do you, we talked about not being afraid to reach out and to engage and to invite investment into our ministries. I think there is one of the concerns that there is, and if all we ever do is ask for money in our communication in every brand touch point, if it's asking for additional investment, additional funds, like that can get, that can become overbearing for a lot of donors. And so how do you guys think about how often you are reaching out to your audience, to your donor audience specifically, asking for funds and pairing that with content that's just, here's a story of transformation. We're not making an ask right now. We're just telling you, you've invested and this is what impact that we've seen because of your investment. And where does storytelling play in that mix or that strategy?
That's a great question. So if you're thinking about existing donors, not trying to get new donors, but your existing donor base that you already have, there's a fundraising flywheel that I reference a lot. And step one is making sure that you thank a donor after they give a gift. It could be a gift of time, a gift of money, a gift of a connection to somebody else who cares about your cause, whatever that is. Intentionally, when you find out about it, thank them. Pick up the phone, send a text. I did handwritten note cards. There's a variety of things that you can do. But then after that, usually it trails off for a lot of nonprofits because they get busy, right? What does the executive director or the pastor have? 50,000 other things on their plate. But step two is actually report back on the impact of that gift. If you're a church and you're doing a building campaign, a capital campaign of sorts, it's following up 2 months later to say, here's a photo of the foundation of the church that we're building. Or again, that clean water initiative, your funds have been in use and look at this person in Malawi who just got clean water as a result of your gift. So step two is always report back. Step three, if you're priming that pump again, it's doing some sort of ask. It doesn't always have to be an ask for money. But you thank them, you've reported back so they know that you're like taking care of the gift and stewarding it well. Mm-hmm. So step three is making an ask of a pledge or another donation or an ask for a phone call and conversation if you feel like you need to deepen the relationship. Doesn't have to be a specific ask for money. And then step four is following up. Over the course of, gosh, an entire year, I would have a group of donors, usually about 400 to 500 donors that were directly responsible under my care that were going through that flywheel on a regular basis. Now, again, a smaller nonprofit might have a small group of 30 donors and you could keep it on a spreadsheet. I've actually got a spreadsheet template if someone wants it, right? Where you could actually toggle back and forth and be like, ooh, I just thanked them. Next up, I set a reminder on my phone 15 days from now to follow up and give them an update. It can be very manual if it's a smaller group and really targeted and directed with software if it's a larger group. But if you have that flywheel in place, you don't have to have a brand new program to excite them. You're just continually talking about the next thing, thanking, reporting, asking, following up. That sort of flywheel there is going to generate greater trust and generosity. Mm.
Well, and storytelling plays such a huge role in that, where in every ministry, church, Christian nonprofit I've ever worked with, there's countless stories of how God's at work and how he's redeeming and transforming life. Like that's never an issue of whether or not the impact is being made by him through that ministry. The issue is how often are we testifying of that work? And so, man, Gary Vee talks about the difference between creating something new and documenting what you're doing. We have a God that's at work always. He's always at work. He's always moving. He's always transforming life. And so it's simply a matter for ministries, churches, Christian nonprofits to document what he's doing. Like, we're going to testify of the transformation that's taking place in the people we serve on a regular and ongoing basis and make that a part of our DNA. And now we've solved, if we follow that plan and strategy, we've solved the problem of our content strategies. We've solved the problem of our touch points with our donor base, of whether or not our asks are outweighing our other communication or vice versa. When we simply say we're going to regularly testify of what God's doing through real life change in real people, and then do that on repeat as a part of the ethos of the DNA of our organization. Man, now you've got 9, 10, 11, 12 touch points where you've said through story, right? Like, talk about value. We're always looking for how do we apply value, give value to our donor base, our audience. Like, there's intrinsic value in the story of a transformed life. And so when we just simply regularly testify of what he's done, now I can, 10 touch points in, I've said, here's 10 different stories of life transformation. Now I'm ready to say, hey, would you continue to give to this organization? Well, absolutely. Like, you guys have shown me how much my investment does. Of course I want to give. Like, it's an automatic yes. And so that's how we try to encourage ministries to think through stories. Like, this is something that just needs to be a part of who you are. And it needs to be a consistent and regular practice. And so if that's the case, then how do we build systems around that so that we're regularly creating content that testifies of his great work?
100%. Yeah, I love how you frame that. It changes everything.
Yeah. Well, Evan, this has been an awesome conversation. I want to be respectful of your time, though, and make sure we wrap up on time. If people want to get a hold of you or learn more about what you guys are doing at Evan Cox Consulting, how can they get a hold of you?
Great question. I appreciate you asking. If you go to evancoxconsulting.com/nonprofits, there's a whole bunch of resources there specifically for ministry, church, and nonprofit leaders, including a strategic fundraising plan template that I created that's actually a pared down, easy to approach document that allows you to say, okay, what are my goals and objectives, whether it's raising funds or communication and marketing, and then how do I bring that to the market in a way that's easy for me to execute on and drives results. So you can find that and a whole bunch of everything else at /nonprofits.
Awesome. And we'll put that in the show notes as well. As we wrap up, can I pray for you?
Absolutely. I'd love that.
Yeah. Father, we just lift up Evan and his team. I pray that you would just continue to go before him as they serve nonprofits and businesses and help them clarify their message and tell better stories. Thank you so much for the work that you're doing in his company and in his in and through his team and the ministries and businesses that he's serving. Father, I pray that you would just continue to lead and guide and direct him and his team, Lord. We love you and thank you that we get to be a part of what you're doing, that we get to be a part of this redemptive work. And I just ask that you would help us to lead organizations and ministries and churches in testifying of what you're doing, because you're worthy of those stories being told. We love you. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Thanks so much, Zach.
Yeah, thank you. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Ministry Grow Show. If you enjoyed it, we'd appreciate it if you rate and or review us on the iTunes store. And make sure you subscribe so you never miss an episode. If you have a story to share with other ministry directors and pastors, or know someone who would be an incredible guest on the Ministry Grow Show, let us know. We love connecting with ministry executives and sharing their wisdom and insight with our audience. Just send us an email at info@reliantcreative.org. And lastly, if you need help telling your ministry story, we would love to share how we can help in that process. Check out Reliant Creative at reliantcreative.org. See you next time.